Jimmy Buchanan, our music director, had the Sunday off for a reunion back home, and so we asked Robin to play on the piano for us, and we're so glad you did. Thank you. Beautiful. So the choir will be back next Sunday, as will Jimmy. Hear the gospel as we continue in Matthew's gospel in the 20th chapter. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for the vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them to work. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace and said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever's right." So they went. When he went out again about noon and about 3 o'clock, he did the same. About 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around, and he said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He said, "You also go to the vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last, then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now when the first came, they thought they would receive more. But each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us who borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat." But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I'm doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I give to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. In our hearing, our speaking, our living. I was in a meeting once where we did one of those icebreaker things, you know, that's supposed to help people feel more comfortable, and sometimes it works, and sometimes you're just kind of annoyed. With this one, we were asked to go around and say our name and to share our pet peeve. So we did. We went around and people shared all sorts of things. A surprising number were bathroom related. I will not go into details. A number were driving related, of course. Some were about TV ads that are annoying, texting at meals, talking in movie theaters, and so on. Perhaps you share some of those. My pet peeve was line jumpers. You know, those people who push or sneak or maneuver their way to the front of the line. Whenever I'm in a big city, it never fails. If I'm taking a subway, there's always that one person who dashes down the stairs as the train doors open and gets past all of us who've been waiting for 25 minutes for that train and gets a seat, the last seat, you know? Life is hard. It's just... Or when the line is really long for a concert and you're just waiting and waiting and waiting and you see a couple of people come and they act like they know somebody in the line, you know, and then, oh. Or those cars that drive, I got 100 examples of that. Cars that drive along the shoulder when there's a big slowdown. Yeah, right? And cut in front of everybody else. Oh, that gets me. Because, you know, it's like their assumption is where they're going is far more important than where the rest of us are going, when I know, in fact, where I'm going is far more important than where they're going. I understand that there are cultures where lines aren't formed. It's always just kind of a mob. People just kind of gather in a clump. I wouldn't do well in those cultures, I don't think. I want things to be fair, which presents an interesting question. What exactly is fair? Often we talk about fairness as sameness, everybody getting the same. There are those who argue that in our school system, there should be the same amount allocated for every student, which sounds fair. But what about those with special needs? Or a different kind of example. What if we decided, okay, we're all going to make a concerted effort to be more healthy. We're going to give a bicycle to everybody who comes to church next Sunday. That sounds fair. We're going to give everybody a bike. But what about those who cannot ride or shouldn't? Or those who need a smaller bike or a bigger one? Is that fair? There are those who argue, and this gets on really dangerous ground, that not all seniors should receive senior discounts or Medicare. Those are fighting words for a lot of folks. Both readings this morning touch on this notion of fairness. The story of Jonah is so powerful and strange and wonderful. God tells Jonah, go to Nineveh, go preach and tell them to repent, to turn their lives around, or they're going to be destroyed in 30 days. This really rattles Jonah's cage because he hates Ninevites with good reason. Nineveh was the capital of the Assyrian Empire, and the empire had obliterated the northern kingdom. They had done so rather ruthlessly. Jonah finally gives in, though, travels on the ship. There's that whole whale part we know about. But really, the most amazing part of the story is not the whale. It's that Nineveh does turn around. They leave behind their wicked ways and turn to God. And Jonah is angry, furious. I knew it, he said. I knew you were a God who's merciful, slow to anger, full of grace, abounding in love. And I'd rather die than see you give that to Nineveh. It's just not fair, he says. The gospel reading is a parable. Clarence Jordan, the great Georgia peanut farmer and theologian and writer and activist who founded Koinonia Farms, once said, whenever Jesus told a parable, he lit a stick of dynamite and covered it with a story. There is indeed a hidden explosion in this parable. Maybe we can relate to the day-long workers in this. Ones who show up at the crack of dawn, work hard, diligently, agreed to their wage, but at the end of the day, the boss comes and pays those latecomers first and pays them a full day's wage. So we're thinking we're in for a great bonus here, but it doesn't come. It's not fair. We've been hearing a lot in recent months about workers in different parts of the country who are angry because they've worked all their lives, but over the years have been left behind by the economy. They struggle to make ends meet or to find jobs in this high-tech world for which they are not really equipped. And then how easy it becomes for some people to then need somebody to blame. They look and say, oh, it's the fault of those people over there taking our jobs, or those people there are getting hired first out of political correctness, or those don't deserve health care or a path to citizenship or equal protection under the law. And when we're mired in resentment and frustration, we tend to lose sight of the bigger picture. It's always tempting for us to divide people into groups. The deserving versus the undeserving, the American versus not American, worthy versus not worthy. We want to assume there's a level playing field, and some people just don't work as hard as we do. That kind of simplistic thinking ignores much of history and current facts. Did you know that the richest 5% of North Carolina households earn 25 to 30 times more than the poorest 20%? The top 1% wage earners in this state take home 15% of all the income in North Carolina. That white households control 90% of the wealth in America, while black households control 2.6%. There are clearly systems and institutions that are not working for everybody. There are workers who put in a full day and believe they deserve more than what they're getting. There are end-of-the-day workers who face discrimination and poor education and systemic racism and a society that favors the young and the able-bodied, who are wondering, when will they finally get what they deserve? Wealth inequality is a threat to all of us and our democracy, and it is not in keeping with God's vision of abundant life for all. And therein lies the explosion in the parable, because there's another character here, and that's the boss. A denarius was the common pay for one day, a day's wages. It was the baseline. It was considered what was necessary to live for one more day, to sustain life. And so the owner is giving all of them what they need, not what anybody deserved. And the late ones likely needed that denarius more than anyone. It's not fair. It's grace. And it's not how the world works. It would certainly cause a lot of problems. Think about your own workplaces. If this were the system, people would quickly figure out, I only have to show up 1 hour and I'll get my full pay. But somebody said it's not meant as a blueprint for a salary structure. It's a glimpse into God's economy, or Sabbath economy, as some call it. It's how God works. Ched Myers said the Sabbath economics is about the grace of receiving what the Creator gives and the responsibility not to take more than what is needed. Wide gaps between rich and poor are not part of God's plan. And God's people are called to be part of God's generosity so everyone has enough to live on. Everybody gets enough. In God's economy, generosity rules the day and not greed or competition or our limited notions of what's fair. Those who've been left behind or cast aside, those who seem to have little to offer, they are of just as much value to God as the hardest working, most skilled, most advantaged, most prosperous ones. Grace was poured out for the Ninevites and the self-righteous messenger of God. In God's economy, there's no limit to grace. We can waste a lot of time and energy being mad about grace, as in angry, or accept Jesus' invitation to be mad about grace, as in crazy about it, bowled over by it, grateful for it. It's a story told about two brothers in ancient times, and each inherited half the land of their father. And in time, one brother married and had 6 children, and the other brother never married. And one night, the one brother with no family was lying awake saying, "It isn't right that I'm getting half, that my silo is filled with wheat, and there's my brother trying to feed all those children. I'm going to take part of what I have and put it in his silo." So he crept out at night and took wheelbarrows full of wheat and brought it and placed it in the silo. But at the same time, the other brother with the 6 kids was lying awake saying, "It's not right that my brother has no one who will tend to him in his old age. He's going to need more. I'm going to take some of my wheat and put it in his silo. And so he does. And the next morning, each gets up and discovers, why do I have the same amount I did before? So that night, they're resolved to give more. And they do. And the next morning, the same thing. Their silos are still where they were before. So they decide the third night, this time I'm going to pretty much empty my silo and take it. And so they do. And you know what happens on a hillside in the dark night. They see the other approaching. And they know what's been happening. And they embrace. In God's economy, everybody has enough. And everybody watches out for the other. I don't like line jumpers. But in truth, I am one. When it comes to grace, I've gotten so much more than what I deserve. So much goodness and kindness and love and advantages that I never earned. In the end, we're all like those last hour of the day workers. We're given what we need and more. And we're loved by a God who keeps coming after us. Even when we've messed up, even when we've been left out, even when we're fed up with how it works and doesn't work, even and especially when we want to give up, God still comes and finds us and invites us to come work for that reign of generosity and compassion where everyone has enough and nobody's left behind. Not in the sweet by and by, but in the here and now. We're all recipients of grace, all of us. And grace is so much better than fair. I want to ask us to end the sermon by starting the singing of Amazing Grace a cappella so we can just hear and be surrounded by voices singing of this grace. Give us a note.